Today is October 26th, near the end of Chodesh Tishrei, and we are here on Sunday morning learning Mishnah, Masechet Brachot, Perek Shmini. We're in Mishnah Hey, right? So we have in front of us Mishnah Hey, which is not found in what I just gave you, because you're supposed to bring every week the sheets of Mishnah. Oh, you don't have them?
I'll look here.
Goodness gracious, because I gave them out all last week. I don't have any left. So I can...
We can use this.
Maybe it's the Torah Shabbat Peh, so you can do a Peh.
Here, so just return that to me at the end. And I'll look here. So we're reading now in Perek Shmini. Mishnah Hey. Beit Shemayim Rim, Ner Umazon Ubsamim V'Havdala. Right? Which means that the position of Beit Shemayim is... First we do something called ner, right, the candle, the light, and then we do mazon, whatever that is, then we do bisamim, the bracha over the spices, and then havdalah, birkat havdalah. Uveit Hillel omrim, ner uvsamim, mazon v'havdalah. The same four elements, but a different order. Beit Hillel has the ner at first, just like Beit Shammai had, and also Beit Hillel has the Havdalah at the end, just like Beit Shammai had. But in place of what Beit Shammai had, Mazon uvisamim, here the order is the opposite, Bisamim uMazon. They have a little machloket. We don't know what they're talking about yet, but we see that whatever they're talking about, it's not a major machloket. And then it says, Uveit Shammai Umrim, Shibara Me'or Ha'esh. Uveit Hillel Umrim, Borei Mo'rei Ha'esh. Right, they're talking about Birkat HaNer, and they have a double machloket between the two of them. Beit Shammai says that we say the verb in the past tense, bara, right? And secondly says that which was Nivra, that which was created, is something that's in the singular, Ma'or HaEsh, the light of the fire. Beit Hillel Omrim, Borei, it's in the... what we call the present, the participle, the Beinoni Poel, present participle. And furthermore, Mo'orei Ha'esh is not Mo'or Ha'esh in the singular, it's the fires of the, or the lights of the Esh. Right, this is Mishnah Hey.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll catch up.
Okay, we only started 1 minute ago. So we don't know yet what we're talking about. But we see that we have here in this, first in this Mishnah we have two parts, of course. The second part is a machloket concerning what is the bracha over the esh that we say in Havdalah. And there's a double machloket, both as far as the verb and as far as the object. And then the first part of the Mishnah is a machloket in the order of the elements that we say. So what are we talking about? Apparently we're talking about Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat, because we see there the elements of Ner and Bisamim and Havdalah, of light, of spices, and the bracha over the differentiation, which we know from Havdalah and Motzei Shabbat. But there's something that's missing, and there's something that's added. But what's missing? There's no mention of what bracha do we always say in Motzei Shabbat? Of Brei Pri Agafen. There's no mention of the Yayin. In place of the Yayin, there's something else, Mazon.
It's not clear that it's Birkat HaMazon.
Okay, and it's Birkat HaMazon. It is clear.
It
very
is
good.
Clear.
So why should Birkat HaMazon take the place of Yayin? That's the question. And the answer is not complicated. Well, what do we usually do almost right before Havdalah and Motzei Shabbat? That
we
has to do with Mazon.
Sheet.
It's Sudash Lishit. What we have is a combination here of Birkat HaMazon on Sudash Lishit together with Havdalah. And since both of them have Yayin, right, the Birkat HaMazon can have Yayin, and we know that the Havdalah has Yayin. So here, it's a case of someone who, let's say, only had one glass of wine. So he uses one glass of wine for both. So when it says here Mazon, it means two things. It means Birkat HaMazon followed by the bracha over the Yayin. Okay? If that's the case...
I'm okay.
If that's the case, then we can figure out in our terms what this order is here. So let's go back. Beit Shammai says Ner Mazon. But Mazon means Mazon, Birkat HaMazon, and Birkat HaYayin. So it's ner, birkat hamazon, yain, bisamim, havdalah. Whereas Beit Hillel begins again with ner and ends with havdalah. But in the middle, he reverses the order, bisamim and mazon. So it's going to be ner, bisamim, birkat hamazon, yain, the havdalah. If we want to compare it to what we do today, we can simply take away the mazon. And we'll have the same four elements, and let's see if any of them are the order we have today. Right? Beit Shammai says, and we take away mazon, replace it with yayin. Beit Shammai says that we have ner, yayin, bisamim, havdalah. It's not even close to what we do today. We always have havdalah at the end. Okay, that's the same here. But we always begin with, what do we begin with?
Wine.
And here, neither Beit Shammai nor Beit Hillel begins with the wine. They both begin with the ner. So something's strange here. Okay. Let's talk now about the second part of the Mishnah. We'll have to go back to the first part of it. This double machlokut between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So we said that Beit Shammai says that the bracha is in the past tense, and it's over the singular. Whereas Beit Hillel has the bracha in the present tense, and it is over the plural. Now let's think which of these two opinions, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, is more similar to our normal Birkot HaNe'anin that we say every day. Let's say we're saying a bracha over an apple, or over a cake, or over bread.
Oh, Beit Hillel is the version, because we say Borei Nefesh.
You're thinking bracha achona.
Bracha rishona.
So the first question is: do we say the bracha in the present or in the past?
Borei pri ha'etz.
Borei pri ha'etz is singular. Is a past or present?
Present.
It's present, right? Borei, like Hillel says here, borei.
Present.
And same thing. Let's check out hamutzi lechem min ha'aretz. Is that the past or the present?
Present.
It's the present. Hamutzi.
Borei pri ha'etz.
Borei minei mizonot. It's all in the present.
Yeah.
So that's, we hold like Beit Hillel, right, that the brachot are in the present. And the obvious, simple, straightforward answer to the question of why would be because we're not necessarily blessing and thanking for the original creation. We're going back to Sheshet Yemei Breshit, going back to this week's Parsha, we're rather thanking for the present creation, for every single thing that is created for me right now. Right?
It makes it sound like also that God is involved in the creating.
Yeah, it's the same thing that I said. It's a different language.
Okay.
Fine, you can say it like that also. Now, what about the question of the object in the singular or in the plural? Let's say, when we say Brei Pri Ha'etz, well, there it's hard to figure out if it's a singular or plural. Pri. I don't know if you remember, but when we learned this once a few months ago, and I pointed out that the word pri here is a shem kibbutzi. It's a collective noun. It's not the singular, even though it might sound like it is. Brei pri ha'etz, brei pri adama, they all have that same type of collective noun.
Same as in English, except we can say fruits to imply multiple kinds of fruits.
Okay.
But you would say, I have some fruit on the table, multiple pieces, or I have a piece of fruit on the table.
Yeah, right. So the word tree doesn't prove anything here. Uh-huh. So let's see if we could go to a different bracha, any bracha, and see if we have it in the plural and the singular. Like, see, hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz also doesn't help us, because lechem might refer to one kikar, one loaf of bread, or might refer to many. Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. Brei pri hagafen doesn't help us at all. What one bracha can give it away? What one bracha is clearly in either the singular or the plural?
Shakol niyabim.
Shakol,
that's plural.
Okay, shakol.
Well, that's also.
But that also might be referring to one particular thing.
Right.
What one bracha?
Brei
minei mizunot. It's not brei mizunot. Well, anyway, it's brei minei hamizunot. The creator of the mine, of the kinds, that's clearly in the plural, because mine is the construct form of minim, which is clearly the plural. So it turns out also that we hold like Beit Hillel, not only in the matter of the verb being in the present and not in the past, but also the object being in the plural and not in the singular. Okay, so now let's think if we could figure out why Beit Shammai would have the verb in the past tense and also the object in the singular. I think they're related. Does anyone know any midrash or something that might explain to us what Beit Shammai is referring to when he has this bracha in the past tense? Okay, so we'll see it inside. We'll get to it inside. So let's go to some sources. So everyone has the... Can we give David a sheet?
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
So that is the sheet of questions, and also... And this is from today?
Yes.
Yes, great. Got it. Okay, so we'll start with the sources in order. We're looking at the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. And if you want to follow along in the question sheets, we're now in Bet. And the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, this is Sefer Zmanim, right? The Mishneh Torah has 14 different books in it. This is the Book of Zmanim, and it's Hilchot Shabbat, and it's Perek Tishah V'Srim, 29. And at the beginning of the Perek, the Rambam says, Mitzvat Asei Min HaTorah. It's a positive mitzvah from the Torah. Lekadish Et Yom HaShabbat Bidvarim. To sanctify Yom HaShabbat Bidvarim. With dvarim.
Words.
With words. Right. With words. As we're supposed to say something in order to sanctify the Shabbat. Shne'emar zachorot yom ha-Shabbat l'kadesho. As the verse says, zachorot yom ha-Shabbat l'kadesho. And how does it appear the Rambam is understanding the word zachor? What does the word zachor mean?
Remember.
Remember, okay, but if...
He interprets that as l'kadesh.
Right. Remind, right, in Hebrew.
Mention,
right, yeah. In Hebrew, the word zachor doesn't have to mean only to remember as a mental act, but it sometimes has the connotation of remembering in a physical sense. By the way, I think that's a lot about Torah, that this verb has within it sometimes a connotation of not just the mental act, but also the physical concretizing of it. And that's what the Rambam has in mind, as he says, quoting the Midrash, Klomar is to say, Zochreyu Zchirat Shevach V'Kiddush. Mention it, and I'm translating the word as mention it with the mention of Shevach V'Kiddush, of Shevach, how do you say Shevach?
Praise.
Praise and sanctification. V'tzarich L'Zochreyu B'Chnisato U'V'Yitziyato. And you have to mention it. This mention, like we said, of praise and sanctification, b'chnisato uv'yitziato, at its beginning and its end, at its entrance and its exit, b'chnisato b'kiddush hayom, with what we call kiddush, and uv'yitziato with what we call havdalah. So what we learn from here is that the mitzvah of havdalah is a branch, it's a subcategory of the mitzvah of kiddush. And the meaning of it is very simple, that in order to sanctify it, you have to demarcate it, and you demarcate it by indicating its beginning and its end. And they're both acts, both what we call Kiddush and what we call Havdalah, are acts both of Kiddush and Havdalah, because really Kiddush and Havdalah as concepts are the same thing. L'kadesh something means to l'havdil, to separate it from that which is on either side of it. So you make a Havdalah at the beginning and a Havdalah at the end, or to use different language, you make a Kiddush at the beginning and a Kiddush at the end, and it's really almost meaningless semantics that we today call one Kiddush and one Havdalah. They're both Kiddush and they're both Havdalah because they're the same thing.
Rambam also uses the two terms though, right? I mean, I noticed that in Rambam's language, Bichnisatok.
Right. The vernacular is to call one Kiddush and one Havdalah,
right. Okay.
But they're really the same act.
Right.
I just want to point out one other thing, which is totally unrelated, but it's my pet peeve. I just want to point out the way I pronounce the second word of the third line. The second word of the third line. How do I pronounce it? Say it again. Yeah. So you did it right.
What is
Zochreyu. I'm just pointing out, it's not Zach, it's Zo.
Zo, right.
Because it's a Kamatz Katan. And there's no way to know it's a Kamatz Katan from what it's written here. But the proper pronunciation is Zochreyu and not Zachreyu. Like, even in the Sephardi pronunciation, it's still an O sound and it's not an A sound. Because that kamatz is one of 5% of kamatzim that's called the kamatz katan, that has an O sound and not an A sound. Okay. We can go on to the one of the final halachot of this chapter that I quoted. Started. This was Aleph Tet and here Kafket Kaftet. Says, you know what? I'm sorry, we'll get to that halacha later. I made a mistake. We'll get to the halacha later. Let's go to the next source. Now we know something about the background of Havdalah, that it's a kiyum of the mitzvah of Kiddush. Zohort Yom Shabbat V'Kadosho.
Suddenly course, much more important. This recognizing this point that you just made, to me, it made, I had been totally unaware of the point.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
And it makes the idea of Havdalah
as important as Kiddush.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Bookends. So now we're looking at Masechet Pesachim, Perek Rivi'i, Daf Nun Gimel Amud Bet in brackets there, to learn a little bit about what we're talking. Amar Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, Ein Mivarchin Al Ha'or Ela B'Motzei Shabbat. We don't make a blessing over the light, or over fire, really. Over fire, except on Motzei Shabbat, which is the Talmudic way of saying that we say a blessing over fire on Motzei Shabbat. Ril utchilat priyatohu, since that's the beginning of its creation. And you might have expected it to say that we say this bracha on Motzei Shabbat because we haven't been allowed to use fire for 24 hours and now we're allowed to use it. Not what it says. The reason is because we're celebrating, remembering the Tchilat Briato, the beginning of the creation of fire. Fire was created, this seems to say, on Motzei Shabbat, after everything else was created, after the first Shabbat. Now we're going to turn into the Gemara, to the next page, which is skipping a little in the middle, and we're going to see this idea again with more detail. Titania, I'm in the bracket there, last third. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shnei Dvarim Alu B'machshava Li Barut Be'erev Shabbat. Two things went up in thought, in other words, in God's thought, Lihi Barut, to be created, Be'erev Shabbat, in the first week of creation, on Erev Shabbat. V'lo Nibru Elav Motzei Shabbat. So God thought about making them, He planned them on the sixth day, but He really didn't do them until the eighth day, the end of the seventh day. And now it says what the two are. We'll only read one of them. Uvamotzei Shabbat Natana Kadosh Baruch Hu De'a Ba'adam. God put De'a, put wisdom in man. Ba'adam Rishon, the first man. Me'ein Dugma Shel Mala, which literally means according to the pattern of above. Which means
in the image of God.
In the image of God. God put wisdom in man just like the wisdom of God. And what happened? It goes on to say, Vivi Shnei Avanim, and he brought two stones, Utchanan Zo Bazo, and he ground them one in the other. He scraped them, right? Vyatsa Mihen Or, and came forth from them fire. So this is a very interesting midrash. First it says that God thought to create fire on the sixth day, but actually created on Motzei Shabbat. And then it explains what it means that God created fire. What it means is that man created fire. So it means that we're saying that anything that man creates is called a divine creation, or to use language in the opposite sense, you can say we're talking about a divine creation, but refer to things that human technology invents, and it's the same thing, because a man is a creation of God, and apparently man has been commanded to create, and that creation is a continuation of divine creation. It's part of the same process, and that's what it says when it says that God put wisdom in man, me'ein dugma shel mala, according to the essence of the pattern of above. In other words, this basically is saying that man is a mini-god. And when it says at the end of the 6 days of creation, when man was created, that we are commanded lichbosh, to conquer the earth, that means we're commanded to be miniature creators. But to put it in different language, when it says that man was created b'tzelem Elohim, and in the divine image, you look in that whole chapter, first chapter of Bereshit, and ask, well, what is the image of God that man was created in? Well, only one thing is said about God in the whole chapter, which is God is a creator. That's all it says. God is a creator. Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, the first day, second day, third day, all he does is create. So if man is created in God's image, then it means man was created to be a creator, and that's what it goes on to explain when it says lichbosh, you should conquer the earth and fill it, you should do what God did, which is to continue the work of creation, which reminds us of the famous midrash about Brit Milah, about circumcision, in which Rabbi Akiva says, just like peas need to be boiled in order to make them edible, and just like wheat needs to be to go through the whole process of grinding and making flour and bread to make it usable, so the human body, in the same sense, has to be perfected. And it's the same idea, that man is given the mandate to continue the work of creation. So when man created fire in Motzei Shabbat, it's the same thing as God creating it, which of course has very interesting ramifications. Right, when we say that, man created cell phones, well, you can say in this language that God created cell phones, the same thing. Or man, brought human beings to the moon. God put us on the moon. It's the same thing. It's just different ways of saying the same thing.
That has theological implications as well. I mean, tremendous.
It has theological implications, of course. To me, it's important to notice that when I say that God created cell phones, what I don't initially mean to say is that every moment of human life is programmed, and literally at that very minute, God put in me a little stimulation that caused me to invent the cell phone. It doesn't have to mean that at all. Complete. Right. It could be. We're not talking about the question of is there free will determinism. There could be complete free will, but we still use the language of God created cell phones because we understand that man is continuing a mandate that God gave him. And the same thing, by the way, for Torah Shebaal Peh. Same thing for Torah Shebaal Peh. When we say, which we learned a few weeks ago, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvotav B'tzivanu. Ladlik Ner Shel Hanukkah, we learn that it means, blessed art you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who commanded us to listen to the Hachamim, and the Hachamim commanded us to read the Megillah, or to light the candles, to wash our hands. In other words, the fact that the Hachamim commanded us is just like God commanded us. Just like the fact that the Hachamim created cell phones is the same thing that God created cell phones. Human beings are acting in a God-given mandate to improve the human body, to improve the world, to improve the Torah, and it's all part of the same continuum.
Pretty interesting. The only problem I see with this is the time I feel least godly is Motzei Shabbos, because I'm always feel, oh, Shabbos is over, you know, now what, you know?
So, this actually, I think, has a certain answer to that. It's not explicit here. It brings us to other midrashim. But I think I once talked about this. Let's see. Remember the famous machloket between Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says that you should plow during the plowing season and plant during the planting season. And when it's not plowing time and not planting time, you should go and learn Torah. And Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, you should learn Torah all the time and rely on a miracle that you have something to eat. Remember that. And then we have a machloket concerning the verse that says, Sheshet yamim te'aseh melacha. 6 days shall be done melacha, or a different version appears in a different place, 6 days you shall do melacha. B'yom ha-shvi tishbot, and the seventh day you should rest. So there's a machloket, Tanaim. Does it mean that there's a mitzvah to rest on the seventh day, and the other 6 days are background to the seventh day. The other days you have to work, but the seventh day is the mitzvah to rest. Or other Tanaim say that 6 days you should work is a mitzvah, and the seventh day to rest is also a mitzvah, but there's a mitzvah to work the 6 days.
It depends on taseh v'taseh, right? It doesn't.
Oh, okay. It doesn't. Both opinions
take into account.
Read both verses. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who says you don't have to work ever, holds there's no mitzvah to work. Rabbi Yishmael, who holds that you should work and also learn Torah, holds that there's a mitzvah to work. If you take the opinion there's a mitzvah to work, well, that's what we're seeing here. There's a mitzvah to work. There's a mitzvah to improve the world. There's a mitzvah to improve the Torah. And that means that on Motzei Shabbat, when we light the candle and say the bracha, we are actually acknowledging and thanking God that now we're back to work, because we want to work, because it's a mitzvah, just like we're being resting on Shabbat is a mitzvah.
And so, just reflecting on Eric's point earlier about the theological implications, we also have, one hears sometimes arguments in the popular press about things like stem cell research. God wants you to do that kind of research, or God doesn't want you to do that kind of research, and this language may or may not have an implication about that. Yeah. That if you're doing it, God must want you to do it. I mean, one could say, if it's being done, if it's being, you know, you're doing creative work, that's in the image of God. That's appropriate to do if it's capable of being done, one might argue. You could say the other side also, I'm sure, but
I think that you're right. That our default position, not knowing additional arguments, would be that any type of technological advancement that leads to the diminution of disease, the conquering of disease, or the improvement of human life, our default position would be that it must be good. Of course, there could be possibilities. I mean, if it's involved in an isur, if it's involved in murder, if it's, then we might have to say no. And indeed, I remember that about a year ago when Rabbi Michael Broyd came to speak here. Were you there? He spoke at Natalie's restaurant for the Kollel on stem cell research and many, many, many other types of crazy reproductive pharmaceutical or whatever you want to call it.
Technologies.
Yeah. He basically said that everything's permitted. He basically said everything's permitted. And he just took an hour to say that. And all of many of these very, very gut-wrenching discussions that you find in the Christian world, you just don't find in the halakha, concerning, for example, stem cell research. That's not to say that everything is permitted, but almost everything is permitted. Almost everything is permitted.
The other sort of, can I just add, the other sort of astonishing, eye-opening point that when we read this is that when we say, or when I've heard, man is created in the image of God, I've always understood that to mean, and therefore we're to act morally. That's all you say. This says something much, much, much more than that.
Yeah, there are many, 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 many different opinions what is Shalom Elohim. But to me, the pshat is simply, like I said a few minutes ago, go to chapter 1 of Bereishit, at the end of which it says that man was created in Shalom Elohim, and see what you know about God. And you only know one thing from the whole chapter, which is God is a creator. He doesn't create, it doesn't say he's moral, it doesn't say he's even wise, it doesn't say anything except he's a creator. And I think this Gemara, if it doesn't prove that that's what Shalom Elohim means, it certainly buttresses the point.
So it's a par of statement. It's not a positive. It's not a negative.
Why do you say that?
Well, because if you take Selam Elohim to mean morality, we might look at history and have a problem with that. In other words, if you say Tzelem Elokim refers to a certain morality that man has to live up to. But if we say Tzelem Elokim just means creating, creating in the world, so I think that presents less of a problem in terms of...
Okay, but I wouldn't call it parva, because...
I'm saying
it's good. If God is the creator, then creation is good.
But the creation could be used for positive or negative. Isn't that the point?
No. Also, it's not.
Okay.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Kitov, it says the creation was good. And the creations that man creates, the development of the world, is, again, the default position is that it's good. Of course, it could put to negative uses, like nuclear energy or a number of hundreds of different technologies.
Or Migdal Babel. That's another, but I mean...
So we would say that Migdal Babel, had it not been for the Ga'ava that went along with it, that by definition, building is good. Again, the default position is that building is good.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, let's see the next source. Let me just see if I didn't skip anything here. Fine, okay. This is from Masechet Beitzah. And it says, page 69 in Rav Steinsaltz's edition, Damar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Well, yeah, wait a second, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I want to go back and see how we just learned affects our understanding of the Mishnah. Right, so if the Midrash we just read had said that on Motzei Shabbat was light created, was fire created by God, by man, and that's the reason we say that bracha, borei morei ha'esh, or bara ma'or ha'esh on Motzei Shabbat, and it brings us back to the machloket of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So Beit Shammai says that the bracha is bara ma'or ha'esh, who created the light of fire. So whereas Beit Hillel says, who creates the lights of fire. To me it seems pretty silly what's going on. Beit Shammai is referring to a historical event, and Beit Hillel referring to a continuous, not event, but events. But for Beit Shammai, I'm marking a historical fact that at that moment God created fire. According to Beit Hillel, I'm not just marking historical fact, I'm running with it. I'm applying it. I'm saying that every single Motzei Shabbat, in other words, every single Saturday night, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, God is creating many, many fires through human ingenuity. Simply an application of the past to the present. And it's a celebration of human creativity. That sounded pretty good.
And presumably this midrash...
Sounded like a sermon.
Presumably this midrash would predate Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai. Presumably Beit Shammai would be aware of this midrash.
You mean the midrash on page...
The midrash on Psachim, Perek Revi'i, about Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shnei Devarim Alu B'machshavo Lehibarot Be'er Shabbat V'nivu. This midrash seems to be in line very much with Beit Hillel's position.
Why? I think it could be either of them. The midrash is pointing out the historical event.
Right. But it the midrash ends, V'hevish Ne'evanim...
That's what happened thousands of years ago.
So Beit Shammai would look at this midrash and interpret this historical, where Beit Shammai looks at this.
Yeah. Beis Hillel also would say, of course it did happen, but my bracha has to do with
the continue. Yeah.
You see, whereas Beit Shammai is saying, my bracha has to do with the past, that recognition of that former event.
Uh-huh.
Beis Hillel is saying, of course it happened, but my bracha has to do with what's going on now and a continuing, as the rabbi said, celebrating human creativity or creation.
Ah, and I just had the proverbial light bulb go off in my mind. Oh, it's nice. So remember the story of Tenor Shalach Nai.
Yeah.
Remember the story of the...
They make the water flow backwards.
Uh-huh. Right?
Torah Lo B'Shamayim.
And Rabbi Eliezer is the one who says the halacha is like me. Right? You remember the whole machloket, the tenor is tamei, the tenor is tahor. Rabbi Eliezer says one thing, the hakamim say another thing. Rabbi Eliezer doesn't give in to the majority opinion. He tries to prove by making the water flow backwards, by making the walls of the Beit Midrash fall down, by making the carob tree uprooted. He tries to prove that he's right. A voice comes out from heaven and says that he's right. And the hakamim say, God, you have nothing to do with this. Don't get involved. And then, at the end, Rabbi Eliezer is excommunicated. Just remember that story, and now remember something else. That it says in Shirkevot that Rabbi Eliezer is bo seed sheinoma bed tipa. Rabbi Eliezer is a plastered cistern that never loses a drop. Okay? He remembers everything. I remember another statement from Rabbi Eliezer that said, Me'olam lo amar deval shelo shamami rabo. He never said anything that he didn't get from his teacher. Rabbi Eliezer was a man of tradition, not a man of creativity. He never forgot everything. He passed it on exactly as he got it. He claimed in the story of Tenor Shulachnai, you can't argue with me because I got it from my teacher. This is tradition. And the Hakamim, he claims, are perverting Torah by using their sechel. He says there's no place for sechel when you have a tradition. And Achamim say, no, even when you have a tradition, there's a place for sechel. In every generation, human beings can recreate according to their understanding. Now, that story of the Tenor Shulachnai points out that Rabbi Eliezer is called Rabbi Eliezer Hashamuti. Hashamuti. There's a machlok at what it means, Hashamuti. There are those who say it means he who was put in Shamta, in Cherem, excommunicated. But there are those who say it means Rabbi Eliezer of Beit Shammai. Rabbi Eliezer was the last remnant of Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai, remember, Hillel and Shammai are at the beginning of the Common Era. Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are from the year, let's say, 20 to the year 70, until the destruction of the temple. Rabbi Eliezer lived after the destruction of the temple until the time of Yavna. He was one of the last holdouts of Beit Shammai. Now put everything together. Rabbi Eliezer is about conservatism, about retaining the past in Torah studies, but now perhaps also in relationship to the physical world, if we're making the parallel. That's why his bracha is in the past tense, because he's not celebrating human creativity. He's celebrating God's creation as is. Just like he celebrates God's creation as is in Torah, and he doesn't celebrate the creativity of Torah Sheval Peh, perhaps also he doesn't celebrate the creativity of man and technology, but says, take it as it is, as God created it. Therefore, his bracha is bara. Whereas Beit Hillel are the ones always of the human element in developing God's creation, whether it's in Torah Sheval Peh, whether it's in the physical world. So Beit Hillel's bracha is borei, because God is creating through man, or man is creating through God every single moment. That's... I like that. It might even be true.
Well, objective truth, though, that whole Tanur Shalachnai shows that objective truth doesn't have a veto, because apparently Rabbi Eliezer had the objective truth, Yitzchuni B'nai. Hashem is had the objective historical truth. Hashem apparently, the Midrash literally is on Rabbi Eliezer's side. That's objective truth.
Well, no, but it says Yitzchuni B'nai.
Yitzchuni B'nai means
God is happy. It says God
right.
Smiled and said.
But they.
We say Achrim, Achira,
Rabim Lahatos.
Right.
The majority. In other words, right. That's not the whole story of Tenor Shalachnai, but just one sentence. A parent might have a certain opinion, a certain stance, but what's more important to the parent is not that the child accepts that stance, but that the child shows creativity and independence. Okay. So now we said we're going to turn to Masechet Beitzah. And if you just want to see in the question sheet, we are on D here. or in D. So it says here in Masechet Beitzot.
That's a little discussion, I guess, regarding what, you know, if you see all that going on, I don't understand, you know, it's all different discussions off the topic, really. But it bothers me how Rebbeim couldn't say, okay, we see the Hashem is making, you know, showing us what's the correct halacha here. Why can't we just say, okay, therefore we'll decide to say like Rabbi Eliezer.
You know,
okay. I mean, that's a whole different discussion.
Well, their understanding was that that's not what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants.
Yeah.
A parent might say, you know, I want you to go to Princeton, but the child might understand what the parent really wants is for me to make my own decision and not go to Princeton. Yes, he wants me to go to Princeton, but what he really wants me to decide for myself.
That's to go to Princeton. Yes, we used to jokingly say, we want our children to grow up and be independent, make their own decision, be independent, and do their own thing, as long as that thing they decide to do is exactly what I want them to do.
Well, apparently God is a better parent than we are.
All I can say is they didn't understand what Rabbi Eliezer understood. And even when the walls were falling, they didn't understand what Rabbi Eliezer stood, and they were rabbim. That's all I can think of.
They were, you know, what?
They were the majority. They did not understand what Rabbi Eliezer stood. Right?
Well, they may have understood exactly what he was saying and agreed with the fact that that used to be the law, but for some other reason they thought it needed to be changed.
That's what Torah Labashmani means. It's...
Okay, it is a very, very big discussion.
I'm not sure.
Okay, Masechet Beitzah. It says here in Daf Tet Zayin Amud Aleph in the brackets, Damar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Neshama Yitira, Noten HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'adam.
You don't have
we're sharing. Okay, there's extra.
Third page or so.
Damar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Neshama Yitera, an extra soul, Noten HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'adam, gives God to man, Erev Shabbat, L'motzei Shabbat, and on Motzei Shabbat, Notlin Ota Himenu, it is taken away from him. Shneemar Shabbat Vayinafash, as the verse says, Shabbat Vayinafash, which literally means that God rested and was refreshed. Kevan Shavat Voi Avda Nefesh. Voi means oy vavoy. Avda means is lost. Nefesh. What the Midrash is doing, it's taking the words Shabbat Vayinafash, it's taking it to mean Shabbat, Shabbat past. Voi, ay ay ay, Nafash, oy on the lost Nefesh. Vai nafash is voi nefesh.
Right. It's a nice pun.
So it's a plain word. So when Shabbat leaves, we say voi, my lost nefesh. That's what it says in...
Does that help your point? Excuse me. Does that help your point that you were saying before, how you feel once say Shabbat?
Yeah.
It supports it, yeah.
Yeah, voi
nefesh.
Extra.
No, the oi.
The oi, right.
By the way, that's why we need to eat more on Shabbat as well, because we have an extra neshama you have to feed it.
But that actually also might be why we light the light, to remind yourself that you're going now to the 6 days of creativity, and you have to be happy that you're now able to continue being in God's image.
It's the gedolah.
So, I want to play with the Tosfot say about what we just read. So the next page is Masechet Beitzah, a few pages earlier, and there's a Tosfot at the bottom of the page. And he says, see the Tosfot there?
Uh-huh.
I have two little pieces in brackets, they both say the same thing. Deha de mivarachinan abisamim motzei Shabbat, that we bless on the bisamim, bisamim, in Aramaic means on the bisamim on motzei Shabbat, Mishum nefesh yitera shavad. It's because of the extra soul that's lost. You're just making the connection. But Midrash says we lose the extra soul, and then he says that's why we bless the besamim. I should say that's why we smell the besamim, in order to get back that neshama yitera. or to make compensation for it. Now, I wanted to hold the place, but go back for a moment to the first page of the Rambam, where the Rambam at the very bottom of the photostat in Halacha Chaftet says, V'lama mivrachim al habisamim v'motzei Shabbat. Why do we say the bracha on the bisamim on motzei Shabbat? Mipnei shahanefesh do'evet l'tziyat ha-Shabbat. Because the soul is saddened at the exit of the Shabbat. Misamchin ota, we make her joyful. Miyashvin ota, and we revive her bereach tov, with a good smell. So all I meant to point out was how the Rambam takes the Gemara and basically says what Tosfot says, but says it in non-mythic language.
Right. There's no extra soul.
There's no extra soul.
For Rambam.
There's no extra soul. There is an extra soul, but it's a metaphor.
Right.
And it might be that Tosfot agrees, but Tosfot retains the language of myth, whereas the Rambam translates it into language of rationality. But they're not disagreeing. I think they're not disagreeing. They're saying the same thing. Okay. So now we go back to...
I thought there was a Gemara that says... There's a Neshama Yisera.
We just read it.
Yeah.
Just read the Gemara. But what does that mean? What does it mean there's a Neshama Yisera? It means there's something added to our soul. It means that great happiness added to our soul. But it doesn't mean in any real sense that is a Neshama. What does it mean? What would it mean in Neshama? What would it mean Neshama Yisera in a literal sense?
Extra.
Are we supposed to believe? You're supposed to believe that there's an extra soul? What does that mean?
Rambam does.
What does that mean? What does it mean?
More.
Okay, it means happiness. What does it mean more? My soul is expanded by happiness. But what is it? What do you mean, Shami Tira?
Yeah.
That's what it means.
He wrote it like a rationalist.
But I'm hard-pressed to understand any other fashion, perhaps because I'm a rationalist. What does it mean in the Shami Tira in any other sense? So, we now have all the background to Havdalah, right? We talked about the bracha over the bishamim. We talked about the bracha over the fire, and all we want to do now is go back to the Mishnah and ask ourselves the question we asked at the very beginning, which is, why is not, what time is it?
10:35.
Perhaps 11:35? 10:30. It's only 10:35. Oh, fine. Okay. Well, I'm only going to take 10 more minutes. Why is there no opinion in the Mishnah that is close at all to what we do today? Because what is our order? Let's think of what our order is. What do we do first?
Yayin.
Yaknahas.
Very good. Bisamim.
Ner.
Havdalah. Right? Whereas in the Mishnah, whether it's Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel, although we begin, we end with Havdalah, which is what we do, we begin in both of them with Ner. It's just not what we do in any sense. So now we're going to see how the Gemara explains how we get in our custom, how we get to our custom for what the Mishnah says. Okay? So this is Masechet Brachot. I think it's the last page of the source sheet. What the Braita says about our Mishnah, it's in the bracket, is Zo Divrei Rabbi Meir. Aval Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo Nechlaku Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, didn't argue Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, Al Hamazon Shubetchila, Vala Havdalah Shibasov. They didn't argue that the mazon is at the beginning, right? My mazon is birkat mazon plus yayin. It's at the beginning. V'habdalah shibasof. V'alma nechlaku, and what do they argue over? Al hama'or v'ala bisamim. They argued over the order of the light and the spices. Shabbat shamayim rim al hama'or v'charkach bisamim. First the light and then the bisamim. U'beit hillelom rim bisamim v'charkach ma'or. So according to, what do we have here? We have a machloket in remembering the machloket of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And there's a machloket Tanaim over what was the machloket of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Reminds me what David pointed out last time, that the whole Gemara is an effort to reconstruct on the basis of very, very flimsy evidence. So here we not only don't we know the halakha, we don't even know what the machloket was.
The machloket over the machloket.
But if we take the opinion, not of Rabbi Meir, which is found in our Mishnah, but the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda over what the machloket was, then it turns out that we hold today like Beit Hillel. Because what did Beit Hillel say here? So Beit Hillel said mazon is first, which means yayin, and then says bisamim, and then says ma'or, and then says havdalah, which is what we do. And indeed, at the end, it says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, this is not part of the Braita, this is a generation after the Braita, Nahagu ha'am kebeit Hillel, alib the Rabbi Yehuda. The am was noheg like Beit Hillel, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of Beit Hillel. So that's how we get to what we have today. But first we have the yayin, if we did Birkat Mazon, then the yayin, and then we have the bisamim, and then we have the or, and then we have the havdalah. That's it.
Well, in the year 200, the Mishnah pretty much is codified, right? Is
the Mishnah?
So in the year 200, this doesn't appear in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, we have the original order, which is nothing like we do today. So, I mean, how does this would be a machloket at the same around the same time as the Mishnah? But it didn't make it into the Mishnah.
The machloket between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda.
Yeah. Right. In other words, they would not accept the Mishnah's position about what Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel's machloket.
Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda were a generation before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi.
Right.
So the question is, why did Rabbi Yehuda Nasi codify the position of Rabbi Meir and not the position of Rabbi Yehuda? Alternatively, we can say it differently. If he did codify the position of Rabbi Meir, why was the Am Noheg like Rabbi Yehuda? And I don't know. But in any case, this is a clear example of a case in which the Minhag Am wins out over halachic rules of decision. Because the rule should be, if it's codified in the Mishnah, we should hold like that. But we don't.
That's a further extension of the Torah Lo Mashmaim Hi and Tanur Shalach Nai.
That's a good point. Not is it
Hag determines.
Not is it. It's not merely not in Shemaim. It's not even in the Beit Midrash. It's in the street.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. There's a famous statement in Yerushalmi that says when you have Im Yesh Halacha Rofefet Biyadecha Pok Hazi Ma Amcha Dabar. When you have a halakha that's not clear to you, go out and see what the people are doing. I'm not sure that applies today. But that's what the Yerushalmi says. Right.
Well, that would work very well with this, because here, yeah. I guess you have a machloket that's not clear.
Yeah. Okay, so we've now had 3 weeks in which the other group has brought breakfast.